whatever.
Right.
Which that's why I love the underground, because you know they just spew whatever. But unfortunately for the radio, and because it's monitored, it has to be clean. That's just the way it is.
Of course. Y'all know y'all can follow me on Instagram, WHFR_babyb. I'll be back next week, same time, same place.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
No problem. Like I say, y'all welcome here anytime.
Yay!
I'll see y'all next week. Prayers go up, blessings come down. Baby B, B to the A to the B to the Y to the B. Underground Hip Hop Awards. Never been there, but I'm taking over.
Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio featuring local and independent artists.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And today we're going to switch gears a little bit to examine some of the other paranormal phenomenon that exists in our world. And perhaps there is a connection between ghosts, hauntings, and other dimensions, and the UFO phenomenon. Today we'll be examining that possibility with Mr. John Robinson. John has been a media entertainer for decades, beginning as bass guitarist for a local rock band in 1966. He went on to become a television host, producer, columnist, radio broadcaster, MC, actor, and author. He has two published rock trivia books, Johnny's Jukebox Trivia and Johnny's Vintage Rock and Roll Question and Answers. His newest book, Paranormal Michigan, lists 150-plus haunted sites throughout Michigan. And currently John is a drive-home radio personality on WFMK. That's a 99.1, and he's working on three new, soon-to-be-released publications. So let's welcome John to the show. Hello, John.
Hey, thank you for having me in.
Hey, I appreciate you coming on, John. Let's see, it sounds like you your love has always been with the music. How did you first become interested in the paranormal?
Oh, well, I've always been interested in the paranormal as well. I'd probably since I was a little kid, and you get bombarded by all that stuff. You know, when I was real little, that's when Universal Studios sold all their classic monster movies to TV, mm-hmm. and those all started coming on television in the 50s. And so, of course, I was dying to watch them. Then all of a sudden, all these magazines came out, have to do with the paranormal and monsters and stuff. That all started in the 50s, too, right when I was a little kid. Mm-hmm. So that's what first got me interested in it.
Very
good. As time went on, as I got older, I found out about ghosts and people that went hunting for ghosts. And just grew from there. I mean, I'm not a fanatic. It's just an interest of mine.
Right.
And it's lasted for decades, and I found out that there's so many other people in this world that are interested in the unknown, you know, not just ghosts, but as you know, is in UFOs and aliens, and other dimensions too. I mean, people are fascinated with the unknown.
Really, they really are. I found that out more and more with my radio show, in that. I find that there are more and more radio shows and TV shows dealing with UFOs and paranormal. And I say paranormal when it comes to the UFO phenomenon. I consider it very normal. I don't know about you. But also hauntings. Hauntings. And this show is broadcast out of Dearborn, Michigan. So we try to concentrate a lot on the Michiganders. And so tell us a little bit about your book, Paranormal Michigan.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, it has 150 supposedly haunted locations throughout our state, Upper and Lower Peninsula. In fact, the subtitle for the book is called Legends, Lore, Facts, and Rumors from Michigan's Dark Realm. Rumors because I know that some of them in there are completely ridiculous, and I even mentioned some of them that I just don't believe myself. But it's all part of what makes Michigan fun. I mean, Michigan, there are so many supposedly haunted sites and legitimate haunted sites throughout the entire state. It's fun to go see some of these places and visit them for yourself. If you don't believe in some of these stories, you go check them out for yourself as well. You might come away a believer, you might not. But this book mentions a whole bunch of them that are probably real, some of them that are probably made up by people looking for attention and otherwise.
Do you have Knock Knock Street in your book?
I do have Knock Knock Street in here. I do have that. That is one of the chapters, you bet.
Really? Yep. I must confess I have not read your book, but the Knock Knock Street, I remember when I was in grade school. That's a, tell us this story for those who do not know about Knock Knock Street. Tell us that story.
Well, if you come to a stop sign in the area, there might late at night, you might see this slovenly looking little girl standing by the side of the road, staring at you with these really deep dark eyes, and you wonder what's she doing there? Why is she standing there by the road? And you might look away for a second to see if the stoplight or anybody else is coming at the intersection. You'll turn to look back at her, and she's completely gone. And did she just disappear into the woods? Did she disappear altogether? And if you before you take off, you might hear a little knocking on the side of your vehicle, but there's nobody there knocking on it. Supposedly it's this entity that looks like a little girl with dark eyes.
Hmm.
That's Knock Knock Road. Okay. The actual name of the road is Strasburg Road.
Oh, where is this located, allegedly?
It is between 8 Mile Road and East McNichols Road. It goes right through the suburbia neighborhoods of Pulaski and Osborne and Von Steuben.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had heard it that there was a street near my home when I was going to elementary school. And that street was called Knock Knock Street. Well, why? Because...
Oh, yeah. Well, there might be more than one Knock Knock.
Oh, there is. Come to find out there. Well, let me tell the story first, very briefly. You drive down the street, and you'll hear knocking on your door between this street and that street. Okay, A and B Street. And you'll hear knocking at the door. And come to find out, there was a child that was hit by a car down on that street years ago, and he was dragged, and he was knocking on the door to try to get the driver's attention, but unfortunately, the child died, and to this day, if you drive down that street, you hear knocking at your door, and that's why they call it Knock Knock Street. And then come to find out, there's a knock-knock street in every darn city in this country.
Sounds like it, yeah. There's another one. Did you ever hear the legend of Morrow Road? They also call it Crybaby Bridge. There's a couple of Crybaby Bridge stories around the state as well. Have you ever heard that one?
No, I don't think so.
It's a Morrow Road. Actually, they made a local movie about it, about Morrow Road. It's northwest of Algonac.
Okay.
Southwest of Marine City. Supposedly, see, I always say supposedly because, you know, in the late 1800s, there's this woman that died on the road. She was looking for a little boy, and she ran out of the house still in her nightgown looking for her son that was missing. And nobody knows how she died, but her ghost supposedly haunts this road because she could not find her son. She died somehow out on the road, still searching for this for this little boy. And that's just one of the legends of Morrow Road, Crybaby Bridge. Rumors say that it's some monster, but see, I don't believe that one. They say it's some monster that goes up and down the road. You'll see a spirit, you'll hear the baby crying, you'll have the ghost's bloody hands leaving stains on your car windshield and things like that. That's supposedly the legend of Morrow Road, just part of it. But yeah, there was a local movie made about that.
So there's a lot of urban legends out there that
oh my gosh, yeah.
Yeah. That really make no sense, but
a lot of them are urban legends, but you know, as I always say, urban legends are based in some fact somehow.
Right.
But they just get exaggerated over the years. Now, one of them that we actually that we paid a visit to last year, I think, or earlier this year, was Pier Cheney. You ever hear of the town of Pier Cheney?
No.
It's a town that is southeast of Grayling. You know where 75 and 127 going to meet at the fork?
I know where Grayling is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, right at that fork, there's an exit. If you take that exit and head southeast, you'll go way out in the sticks, and there's this town called Pier Cheney, P-E-R-E, Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to go down several dirt roads to get to it. Each dirt road gets smaller and smaller. Now, the whole thing about this town was, back in the late 1800s, the majority of the population died of diphtheria. And there's only just a few people left. These few people left, they moved to Grayling, left the town completely empty. They came back a few years later, burnt the whole town down in order to kill whatever the plague was that was killing off all the townspeople. So they burned all the buildings, burned everything there. There's nothing left in that town, except the cemetery and the railroad tracks. And in fact, if you go visit this place, there's nobody around to help you if your car breaks down. But the intersection where the old downtown used to be is nothing but two dirt roads. And if you want to go back and search in the bushes and trees and stuff, you might find some of the foundations of the old buildings. But you cross the railroad tracks, you go down an even smaller road, the ones that have the grass growing in the middle, you come to the cemetery. Now, the cemetery is another story altogether. There have been vandals out there. There are people that have gone out and stolen some of the gravestones. So any relatives have come back and replaced the headstones with rocks. Huh. Some of the other tombstones were handmade. There's one that's just flat in the ground that has Dear Mother scrawled into it, and that's it. There's no date, no name, just Dear Mother.
Wow.
Some of the other graves that have no stones have sunken into the ground because the wooden caskets have all broken and caved in. So they caved in the dirt as well. So you can see those. But there was some supposedly, they said the whole reason the town got cursed with this plague was supposedly by a witch, okay? They banished this woman, this poor woman, to the woods, and she placed this curse on the town, killed everybody off, and supposedly in the graveyard there's all this weird mossy grass, okay? They say it's some evil type of moss, but it's not. All it is lichen. You know, we went there and saw it myself.
Mm-hmm.
It's just lichen. It's nothing evil like that. But it's supposedly the most haunted town in Michigan, even though there's nothing left except railroad track and a cemetery. And you can even find it if you on the map. It's still on the maps. It's still on Google Maps. You can still find it that way, so it's easy to visit. It says if you go there at dusk, make sure you have somebody with you or a phone, because if your car breaks down, there's nobody around to help you, and you don't want to stay there when it's dark.
No. No, well, you know, I completely believe in spirits and hauntings, but they
don't. I got to tell you one more little side note about Pierre Chaney.
Mm-hmm.
Years ago, you know, people are always going out there checking it out. This one kid went out there. He's an 18-year-old high school kid. Went out there, dug up one of the graves, took the skull from the corpse, put it in the back seat or put it in the back windshield of his car, and was driving around with it.
Nice.
Years later, that same kid became sheriff.
Oh my goodness gracious!
Yeah, became the sheriff.
Oh my goodness. So nothing really bad happened to him as a result of that, right?
Well,
other than he became sheriff.
Yeah, he became sheriff.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll be darned. Now, I was going to say the fact that I totally believe in haunted houses and what have you, but a spirit doesn't need a dwelling, doesn't need a house, a building, or anything like that. The spirit can hang out in the woods, so to speak.
So therein lies the tale of the Melonhead Kids of Saugatuck. Now, see, the Melonhead Kids, these were kids that all had water on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And they supposedly, I always say supposedly, because mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's true.
Right.
But they were abused by the doctor in the sanitarium, so they ended up killing the doctor, dismembering him. They took his body parts, his arms, legs, heads, torso, everything, threw it in the woods, scattered his parts all through the woods, which some of them were more than likely eaten by animals and discarded and or buried. And supposedly they went out and lived in the woods from then on.
Who went out and lived in the woods?
And the Melonhead Kids.
Oh, okay.
Just took to the woods and decided to live there and stay away from the sanitarium, so it ended up being empty, and people would go out there and try to investigate, and they would swear that they saw the ghosts of these Melonhead Kids through the woods.
Hmm.
Now let me ask you this. Could it be real Melonhead Kids with water on their brain, or if you want to tie in the aliens with large heads? Is that what they're seeing?
Yeah, very, very possibly. Very possibly. Hanging out in the woods, I don't know. Were there UFO sightings connected?
No, nobody have admitted to any UFO sightings in the area. Just seeing these beings with large heads in the woods.
Hmm. Yeah, that makes you stop and think, doesn't it? Because the aliens, especially the small grays, are reported to have large heads with big black eyes.
Mm-hmm, right, yeah.
So there are also the black-eyed children, you know. And
right.
I understand that your publicist, Sunny Young, is hanging out with you there.
Yeah, she's right here.
She's there. Sunny, can we talk to you a moment?
Hi, David.
Hello, Sunny. Yeah.
Oh, you just made her melt.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. I'm such a celebrity that... Sunny,
well, you and I go back quite a way.
I know. I'm just, as my granddaughter once said... I'll tell you a cute story. I had... this was when she's now 23, but she was 11 at the time. I had to do a interview for my show here at the studio, and I was babysitting her, and my wife had to be out, so I had to take her with me. I said, how do you like to see a real life studio and radio studio? Oh yeah. So I said, okay, we got to be real quiet because I'm going to interview this guy. So she was real good, and we interviewed my guest, and at the end of it, he went one way, and my granddaughter and I went the other, and she said, oh, I got to go see this guy. She ran after him, and so I stood there waiting. She comes back, And I said, what did you have to go see him for? I wanted to get his autograph.
What? Oh, bless her heart.
I said, why his autograph? Well, he was just on the radio. I said, what about me? It's my show. I'm on all the time. She says, you're just Grandpa.
You're just Grant.
So,
that's a good story. Good memory.
So, as to you, you're just Dave. So, so anyway, you're back to the subject at hand here. You are John's publicist for this book. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Barn Cat Ventures has published both of his books so far this year. And, boy, I'm so pleased that we took on that project together. His first book, The Rock and Roll Q&A, that's actually up for 2019 Michigan Notables book. I couldn't be more thrilled about that.
Mm-hmm.
And now with the Paranormal Michigan series, because it will be a series of books, this one particularly dealing with the hauntings and the ghostly realms, it's taken off like way beyond, I think, both of our expectations. So
well, that is
yeah,
great.
I'm glad that I took the gamble, so to speak.
Well, you would know more about the, I think, I don't know. Maybe I'm digging
yeah,
away
don't,
from
don't
John,
to...
John here, but... the black-eyed children, he mentioned the melon-head children. What about the black-eyed children? There's a lot of rumors about the black-eyed children in Michigan.
Well, you know, yeah, there sure are. A lot of ghost stories that you hear throughout the nation, actually internationally as well, a lot of the haunts are described as having dark hollows, you know, black eyes, dark eyes. One of the stories that John has already mentioned to you about the child on the road, the knock-knock road.
Right, right, right.
It was mentioned by many people who say they were witnesses to this this phenomena, that the child in question had very dark, you know, black eyes, and it was
sunken,
haunting.
Sunken dark eyes.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that is a very common thread throughout a lot of the ghostly haunting stories.
Right.
Especially it seems like the children more than adult figures, and I don't quite know how to explain that. But, you know, when you're talking about seeing what you think may be an apparition of a young person out on a road knocking on your window, and your mind probably can't really wrap around the idea of why is this child here, and you look at them and they have black eyes. I know Linda Moulton Howe has done so much research on this. I was listening to something last week that she was presenting about black-eyed children. And it just makes me think now, you know, is there a connection?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not all the time, but boy, it sure sounds like a familiar story when you start, you know, listening from the different venues of presenters.
It sounds like it might be a hybrid children. Hybrid between alien and human. What do you think?
That's what they say.
That's what they say. You don't know.
That's what they say. I mean, I've been in medicine for a long time, and I worked labor and delivery and the birthing ward at a big hospital. I didn't see a lot of children being born without, you know, the whites of the eyes.
Right.
It's not anything I have personally. I've never encountered that.
Right.
But I have talked to a couple of people who say that they have, and it is so startling to them that they say that till their dying day that image will be, you know, burned into their brain.
Yeah, they say that sometimes there'll be a knock at the door, people will open the door and there'll be a couple of these children with huge black eyes wanting to come
in. Filmmakers have really started using those images in their movies, in their horror movies.
Oh, yeah?
The children with the dark eyes, you know, they have the hair in front of their face, they pull it back, and they have the really dark, sunken eyes. They're using those a lot now in horror movies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is a good point, because there was some speculation that maybe, you know, you can buy these contacts now.
Right.
That make your eyes look just about any way you want them.
That's
to.
Any
right. color, any shape, lizard, you know, completely black, completely white.
Red.
red, yeah. Whatever you desire now, you can get them made. And there was speculation that, well, maybe this was some sort of elaborate prank that these young kids were getting a hold of these contacts and just kind of hyping up, you know, grandstanding with the whole
right.
black-eyed children right, right, scenario. Right. But I don't know. It's repeatedly them, these young people knocking on things, whether it's knocking on a house, knocking on a car door, you know, knocking on a phone booth. We don't have phone booths anymore, but whatever they can.
Right. Well,
it always seems to be that they're trying to get you to give them permission to enter into a personal space.
Right. Right. I need to take one moment, not to interrupt, but I need to take a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. That's 89.3 FM. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with John Robbins. And right now we're speaking with Sonny Young, his publicist, and about his book... His book, Paranormal Michigan. And so also, Sonny, let's see, the Paulding lights. What are those?
Oh, well.
John mentioned that.
It's in his book. So I'm going to have him, if you don't mind, I don't mean to.
No, please.
To volley it off from my side of the court. But he does have a chapter in his book written about the Paulding lights.
Okay.
I'm going to let him describe how he has written about it in his book.
Good.
Have you ever been up there to see the Paulding lights?
Up where? Paulding?
Yes.
I assume that's the name of a city in Michigan.
Yeah, it's Paulding, Michigan, right. It's in the Ottawa National Forest in the Upper Peninsula.
No, I'm not familiar with it at all. That's why I say, what are Paulding lights?
Well, the legend of the Paulding lights, it's not a legend, really, because they really are there. And people have traveled all, you know, from out of state even, just to come to Paulding to see these weird lights.
Hmm.
Now, people who witness these lights, they've already read the legend. So when they see them, finally, they're screaming and yelling, and they've taken videos of themselves. Oh, my gosh, that's there they are. There are the lights. If you go there by yourself, you will definitely see these lights. It's there's no question about it. It's not like... You know, am I going to see a ghost or not? Well, you probably won't see a ghost. But if you go to see the lights, you will definitely see these lights. It's not the northern lights. It's not the Aurora Borealis or anything like that.
Mm.
It's lights that appear. Now, the legend of what these lights are, some say there are different legends. Some say it's the spirit of Native Americans dancing on the telephone wires that lead down this very, I thought it was about a 2 mile stretch or something. You can see 2 miles down the road and you see these lights come over.
Hmm.
It could be a railroad worker who got killed that's making these lights show up, but you will see these lights if you go. That's what the Paulding lights are.
Yeah, I remember there was a MUFON, a Michigan MUFON trek that actually had gone up to investigate the Paulding lights.
Right, because they thought it could be something alien
and,
as well.
Well, right. They didn't know, was it orb-related? Was it alien-related?
Yeah, they're round, but they're not like orbs.
Yeah.
Not like orbs.
Yeah, now, I had heard, I didn't know it was the Paulding lights, but I had heard about some... lights that come on, you know, flashing at night, and they couldn't figure out what it was up north. And bottom line, some people say that they're the headlights of traffic on some highway. But
Highway 181.
Okay.
Yeah, I think pretty categorically, David. Not that I want to be a killjoy.
Yeah.
But I think that they have pretty much nailed that down as being the responsible
party. And yet they have seen these lights way back in the 1800s. Am I correct?
That strange? No, you're right. No, you're absolutely correct. And that is the one true mystery about the Paulding lights, is that they were reported before you had traffic.
Before automobiles.
Right. So
I think it was Ripley's, believe it or not, that went out there to find this out for themselves, and they came away saying, oh, it's just headlights. Mm-hmm. But as you said, this was going on way back before then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can't really put the blame on the headlights, can you?
No, but you know, if anybody's traveling to Upper Michigan, though,
mm-hmm.
If you, as John stated, if you go, it's almost a guarantee that you're going to see them.
Right.
So, you know, you can make up your own mind. You know, draw your own conclusions as to what you think it might be. But it's fun just to say you did it. You know,
right.
And especially if you
went there.
Especially if you know the story beforehand, you know all about it. Then go look, and then you see these lights. Your eyes will widen up again.
Yeah. Great date night.
Date night, yeah.
Date night, yeah. At the picnic.
At least you can huddle up with your gal and watch the lights, huh?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, snuggle up. John, tell me, do you personally go out to these alleged haunted houses and investigate yourself?
I have been to some of them, checking out some of these for myself. Not all of them that's in the book, but some of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not what you would call a paranormal investigator.
Okay.
I'm just somebody who has some interest in it and would like to experience these for myself in a natural way, not using machines or EVPs, you know, or you know, anything like that. I want to, and I have experienced some weird stuff on my own without the use of any kind of investigative equipment, and I'll tell you what I'm talking about.
Okay.
I stayed the night in an old house near Kalamazoo.
Mm-hmm.
It was built in 1834, 37, like that. And over the years, it had been used for the Underground Railroad.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, you know, in the basement, saw the tunnels for myself, so I know it's true. It also had been used as a funeral home, funeral parlor. The bedroom I was sleeping in was the room where they kept the corpses, okay?
Mm-hmm.
One night I'm sleeping, or trying to sleep anyway. I was just getting ready to fall asleep, and I was laying on my left side, and I felt cold fingertips walking down my right side. Okay, you know how your fingers do the walking.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it wasn't a muscle spasm because I could feel the coldness of the fingertips on my skin. I could feel the cold.
Yeah.
And the following week, to the exact day, I stayed there again. And this time, I was just getting ready to doze off, and something grabbed a hold of my arm and was trying to pull me out of bed.
Mm.
And I wasn't scared. I just got mad. And I said, leave me alone. And evidently, it let go. Now, somebody else was in the house with me as well, and I asked the next day, was I talking in my sleep? And he said, no, you were talking, but you weren't slurring like you were asleep. I said, well, I imagine that something was pulling me out of bed. They said, yeah, I was in there. They had heard me and went in there and looked, and they saw my arm for themselves being pulled out
really?
Of bed.
Really?
So it wasn't my imagination. Somebody else was there and saw it as well. So. And then I think like another week went by. I'm in there again, about 3 o'clock in the morning. There's in the dark. I'm thinking of the upper left corner of the room. It was all dark. About 3 a.m. I heard the giggling of a little girl in the corner. I didn't mention anything about it until a few days later to the person that owned the house. I said, "Yeah, I thought I heard a little girl giggling a few nights ago," and they said, "Yeah, we've heard that little girl giggling too."
Oh,
so yeah, I've had that happen to myself without the help of any kind of paranormal equipment. That's what I look for.
Yeah, that's the kind of story that sends shivers down your spine, you know.
Yeah.
So
I know the house that John's talking about, and that one That one is a pretty unique structure.
Mm.
It really is. It looks like a little White House, a little mini White House, and has quite a history of its whole.
I was going to ask, what's the backstory on that house?
What I know of it, there's a place over in the Kalamazoo area called Gull Lake, and at one time that was, I believe, called Gull Prairie before it was officially named Gull Lake, and there was a family who they were traveling from the New York area, coming across the United States, and they were traveling as a Conestoga group, and they initially settled in the Ann Arbor area. There's actually a diary of this family's travels. I believe, I want to say it's in the University of Michigan's Library of Michigan Culture, Early Culture. And this fellow was a deacon for a church on the East Coast. He was traveling to find his new settlement. He had a cabin on a sled that was pulled by 30 oxen, and he pulled that cabin all across the land, settling in Ann Arbor at first, with the another family who the wife's name was Anne, and his wife's name was Anne. And according to the diary, that's how the town got its name, Ann Arbor. It was actually originally called Ann's Arbors because both of the Anns had beautiful rose gardens. Then they ended up dropping the plural formation and just made it Ann Arbor.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah. He moved on from Ann Arbor and kept traveling westward, settling over in the Kalamazoo, on the outskirts of Kalamazoo, still pulling this sled along with him through the Gull Prairie area. And the house that stands there now, it was actually erected around the original log cabin, which is in the middle of the heart of the house. But it's almost like your traditional Mason home with the big porch and the four columns in the front and the east and the west wings. And then it has all these earth tunnels going underneath it. It's a fascinating structure.
Is this the home that was pulled along on a sled?
The cabin still exists in the middle of the home, and they built the rest of the structure around it.
Oh, I get it. I thought that sounds
There's a picture somewhere of that house with Abraham Lincoln
making
a whistle stop. The railroad went right in front of it.
Right. I was going to say that sounds like an awfully big house to be carried along, you know, the first mobile home in Michigan.
No, it was just a one-room log cabin, you know, a one-room cabin at first. And then they just, it basically was kind of like a, I don't know, it's a step up from the Flintstones probably, but it was like an original motorhome, sort of.
Yeah.
know, 30 oxen.
You know, 30 but, oxen. Instead of horsepower, it was oxen power, huh?
Right.
Wow. That's something, that isn't it? So was this the home that you're talking about you were in, John?
Yes.
It was? That was that home?
That was the one, yeah.
So it does have...
And like I said, the room I was sleeping in was the funeral parlor.
Well, it was. It had a doctor's office in one wing of the house, and then the funeral parlor was in the opposite wing of the house.
Wow.
So you could go see a doctor, and if you didn't make it, they'd just take you to the other end of the house
I always try to stay out of doctor's offices, so I opted to sleep in the funeral parlor.
Oh, very good. I see. Okay. So you did this, you slept there as an investigation, or were you just, you know?
As a curiosity seeker.
Curiosity seeker.
Curiosity, yep.
And you
I got to tell you one other thing that happened to me years ago. One of the very first weird paranormal things that happened to me.
Okay.
I was in college. There's a story that's in the book, one of the most famous Michigan ghost stories, about this little girl named Mary McNaughton. Mm-hmm. She was presumed dead. They buried her. This is in Jackson, Michigan. They buried her, and her mother, she didn't believe that her little girl was dead. And after a few days, she had finally talked the townspeople or the town officials to, you know, please dig up my daughter because I believe she's still alive. So they ended up, you know, granting her wish. They dug up the coffin, opened it up, and there were scratch marks on the inside lid.
Yeah.
They did indeed had buried her alive.
Yeah.
But, of course, she wasn't anymore. So the legend is that from then on, anybody that visited out there, the grave, you could hear scratching on the gravestones. And over the years, this happened in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And over the years, yes, people would go out there. She was buried in the old part of the cemetery. They finally had to close off the old part of the cemetery for all the vandals going out there, all the people misusing the property. Mm-hmm. They had to dig her up and put her in an unmarked grave in the newer part of the cemetery. And they didn't tell anybody where she was buried. Well, I didn't know this when I went out there. So I'm out there with a couple other guys at about midnight. We're in the new part of the cemetery, not in the old part where she was buried. It's around midnight. It's in October. And I hear this, and I'm not lying, I hear this scratching sound. And I said, where's this scratching sound coming from? So we had a flashlight, and I shined it down. There's this flat gravestone in the ground. So it says, well, it's coming from this flat stone. So I shine my flashlight on it, and I said, well, maybe it's the wind's blowing a leaf across it. No, there was no leaf, you know, being blown across it, but I'm still hearing the scratching. So, well, maybe there's a bug or something crawling across it. So I look, get down a little farther. No, there's no bug crawling across it, and I still hear this scratching noise. So I get down on my hands and knees, and I stick my face right there, inches away from this flat stone in the ground. And I'm still hearing the scratching. I've got the flashlight right on it. And I'm looking right, it's inches away from my face. There's scratching coming from it. Nothing was causing it.
Jeez.
Nothing I could see was causing it, but I could still hear the scratching. That was back in the early 70s.
Yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, that's one thing that has perpetually really, like, freaked me out about death, is how many people are pronounced dead that aren't.
Well, that's why they embalm people now, is because
just to make sure, right?
Just to make sure, if you're not dead, you will be by the time they're done with you.
Oh man!
but it was after that experience that I found out that they had indeed had buried that little girl somewhere where we were.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know that at the time, so that just made it even freakier for me.
Well, that wasn't the only case where such things happened, where they buried people alive. That's why they had those bells before they started embalming people. They would hang a bell over the grave, and a cord went down into the coffin. So in case that individual did regain consciousness, they could pull on that cord, ring the bell, and they could quickly dig them up before they died.
Boy, hearing that bell would be enough to scare me, though. You know?
Well, yeah, but at the same time, you know what it is. You know that person wasn't really dead, but they don't have that anymore because of embalming. They know they're dead. So.
Right.
Oh, how gruesome. So anyway, once again, you know, it's funny because UFOs, alien abduction, that doesn't scare me. But all this other stuff is kind of unnerving. At any rate, I have to take another break and remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. And I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with John Robbins and Sonny Young. About John's new book, Paranormal Michigan. And let's see, what were we talking about? We're talking about the undead here.
Oh, the undead.
The undead and the embalming and
You know, one of the things, you know, when you peruse this book, this Paranormal Michigan book, that there are so many haunted cemeteries in our state that people have seen a woman in white walking through the cemetery, or a woman in blue. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a recurring theme through many cemeteries. There's no explanation for it. I mean, why? Why are these always seeing women, ghostly women in white, women in blue?
I had something I wanted to. Now, one of the next in the series of books that John will be coming out with will have more to do with UFO interactions and then mm-hmm. what we're talking about right now. So I feel like I'm kind of blowing it because we're probably talking about some of the things that you're going to write about in the future. But when you talk about the ghostly images and the women in white, and sometimes there's missing time associated with that. And of course, with UFO, did you hear that?
I heard it.
What is it? I hear something in the
background. I have no idea.
Hold on. Let me go investigate.
We got a ghost investigator there. Go over and investigate that.
I'm going to refocus here. I'm going to focus in. Is missing time.
Right.
With interactions with supposed ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, with the alien, you know, quote-unquote agendas, missing time is probably one of the most common themes that we find.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't associate the fact that people do report missing time with interactions with ghosts.
Right.
As well as they report missing time with aliens.
You're saying they do report that with ghosts?
Surely. If you go back and you do some investigating on missing time and reports with ghosts, there are people that state. Now, did they black out? Did they zone out? Did they? I don't know what exactly happened to them, but they do report that they can't account for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And then that leads me to, screen images and memory, screen memories.
Right.
You're familiar with that term, right?
Oh,
David?
Yeah. Where you see an alien on the side of the road, but they make you see a deer with big black eyes. Am I correct?
Yeah.
Am I right?
Yeah, right. So what's to say that if we want to, you know, like go on the fringe, you know, what's to say that these people that are reporting seeing these ghostly images,
mm-hmm.
especially the images of past relatives,
Right.
Because we know that in the UFO field, people have reported being on craft and seeing dead relatives.
Yeah. So,
right.
So is that a possible connection between the spirit world and UFOs?
Well, why not? I mean, part of being a good investigator is being able to keep your mind open to things that are not common thought, right?
That's right.
Doesn't make it true, doesn't make it real, but at least being willing to put yourself on the line and say, well, what if? Maybe.
Right. That's right.
Let's look into it. Let's see what we can come up with.
That's right.
Let's see if we can find a pattern in the chaos. And I haven't heard too many people making the leap like I just did, because I think it could probably be fatal if you, if you had a career or something and you tried to make a leap like that.
Why
not?
Yeah,
that connection exists.
Well, talk about your career fatality in your career. Just start talking about, I saw a UFO. I've been abducted by aliens. People have lost their jobs. They've lost their families.
The ridicule.
The ridicule factor. But, you know, mm-hmm. that's going away today. That ridicule factor is going away because of the fact that the government's coming out and saying, yeah, we're still investigating. This is real. And they've been priming us for many years to accept this. This is a fact.
And
I agree with you, David.
Yeah. So
And here's another leap, right? So you're familiar with John Lear's the moon being a recycling center for souls. Did you ever hear that?
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that, and as Stanton Friedman would say, I'm putting that in my gray basket.
I love Stanton. God bless him, man. He's still going strong.
Oh yeah, but I am putting that in my gray basket. That's a nice way of saying I don't buy that. Where's your proof? You know. But what about it? Okay, I'm sorry. What about it?
Oh yeah, well, I'm just doing what we call blue skying, right? Mm-hmm. Blue skying is you sit at a big table with a bunch of people and you just throw the most incredible things, the most impossible things. Mm-hmm. You just throw them all out there in the middle of the table, write them down and throw them out and see what you come up with out of it all.
Right.
And one of the things about the whole, I don't know, you know, the whole John Lear's theory that the moon is a recycling threshold for souls. I actually remember when he talked about that for the first time live on Art Bell, and I remember it kind of scared the bejeebies out of me. You know, it was a terrifying little conversation that they had. Well, I'm going to bring that back now to the whole thing of hauntings and ghosts. You know, okay. Native Americans, they also have their theories about, do you go to the light? Do you go to the dark?
Mm-hmm.
And John Lear talks about, you know, that everybody says they see this bright light, but it doesn't hurt to look at it.
Right.
And John equates that to being drawn toward the moon.
Really?
Right?
Yeah. Well, I don't see why it would have to be the moon per se. I mean,
he was focused totally on it. That's the moon. That's what is on the moon. The recycling center for souls.
Right. Okay.
What if a person? And this is where I was going with that.
Mm-hmm.
What if a person? Let's say there's something like that. That maybe there's a spark of some reality to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the person just doesn't go to the moon, you know? They stay here instead, right?
All right.
Because they choose not to go to the moon and they want to, you know, remain here for whatever reason, that's why they are trapped and embodied in this ghostly...
Right, right. Well, it makes you wonder, too. So many spirits are haunting a building or haunting the woods or haunting their own home, whatever, a hospital. They're earthbound. And it's kind of, that's kind of scary. You know, what if your loved ones are earthbound? You want them to go on to a better plane of existence.
Right.
You want
because literally, we say that they are haunting these places, but really aren't they haunting themselves?
Yeah.
They're personally haunted.
They're tied, you know? They're tied to this plane of existence. And that is a terrible thought, really, because not only for your loved ones, but for yourself. Am I going to be a spirit haunting my own home or the hospital in which I passed? That's a terrible thought. But
people choose to do that.
Maybe they choose to do that. That's right. Maybe they choose to. Maybe they don't know. In my book, The UFO Jesus Connection, there was a spirit in Germany that I believe I sent into the light. And if you read that in my book,
it was a very interesting book, David.
Thank you. But
you're welcome.
Do you remember that part about in Germany?
I do.
Okay, and I believe that there was a spirit. I know we know there was a spirit there. Something was happening in that house, and it got very cold when we were doing a séance, trying to get this spirit's attention.
and only in this one room. Only in this one room. And there was no door between the living room and the kitchen. And yet you go into the kitchen, and it's perfectly warm. And the oil furnace was in the living room. And you go back into the living room where the oil furnace is, and it's freezing cold. So we know we got its attention, and we sent it on. I believe that this was a spirit from the Second World War that lived in that home, didn't know he was dead. And we were invading his space. But I convinced it that it was dead, and go on, look up, and you'll see a light. Go into that light. And it got warm. And I saw the sergeant who lived there. I saw him several months later, and I asked him about it. He says, hasn't been bothered by it since. So I feel that, maybe that's what's happening with these spirits that are haunting. They just don't know they're dead. And we'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
Nobody says anything.
Well, and it all seems
the end.
It all seems to focus around negativity all the time, too. I mean, you don't see too many things written about there being a haunting. Of course, it wouldn't be probably called a haunting if that was the case, but you don't hear of too many instances where it's around a happy scenario.
Right, right. That's right.
Very, very rarely.
I mean, you have a lot of playful poltergeists. And a lot of ghosts that don't harm people. Very rarely is there any ghostly occurrences where somebody is harmed. It's usually, you know, done in a playful way, or just as a matter of factly, they're trying to scare you away. But nobody really that often gets hurt.
Right. Right. Well, you just don't know. Different situations call for different spirits, I guess. But do you think, John, that there's a connection between the spirit world and the UFO phenomenon in that it's another dimension?
Well, I tell you, I think more and more about that. In fact, one of the next books I have coming out that I'm working on is going to deal with not just some paranormal stuff, but also some UFO sightings and creature sightings like Bigfoot, which makes me wonder, are these things that are supposedly Bigfoot creatures, are those aliens? And if they do exist, nobody seems to ever get a picture of it. And if it is a picture, it's usually a guy dressed up in a monkey suit or something. But if they really do exist, and people get close to them, they just disappear. Nobody has any proof positive that these things exist, but yet they keep... There's sightings always going on.
Yeah.
So if they are alien creatures, they could be disappearing at will or turning into something else completely invisible.
Yeah. And there seems to be, you know, I was never interested in Bigfoot because it was a zoology problem. But more and more there's evidence of there's sightings, the UFO sightings around... Bigfoot sightings, and then they disappear. It would seem like if there are Bigfoot, they've got to die sooner or later. Where are the corpses?
Where are the corpses? Huh. You know, then of course there's the Michigan Dog Man. There's the Werewolf of Grosse Pointe. There's all these creatures, the Witchy Wolf of Omer Plains. All these creatures that are supposed to be throughout the state of Michigan, but there's no evidence. There's no photographic proof.
That's
but yet
right.
People say they keep seeing these, so where
and
are they?
Even
where
if,
are they for real?
Even if there is photographic proof, you know what they do with photographs of UFOs. I mean, it could be right over your head. You take a picture of it and show it to somebody. Oh, I can do that on my computer, you know?
Right,
So
they're not going to...
Don't you miss the days of Polaroids?
Man. Yeah.
And it's getting harder and harder to tell if photos are real or not.
That's
because so many people are faking them.
That's right. John, we're running out of time here, but where can our listeners go to check out your book?
I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Where can they go to check that out?
You can get on Amazon.com and check it out right there. You could probably order it through any bookstore, but the fastest, best way would get on Amazon.
And that's John Robbins and Paranormal Michigan, right?
You can also find it at John Robinson.
Oh, Robinson. I'm sorry.
Comma author.
What is
it? On Facebook. John Robinson.
Right.
Author on Facebook.
Right. John Robinson. Okay. Very good. I appreciate you joining us, John. And
thank you.
Sonny. And Sonny,
thank you, David. We're
going to have to get together, Sonny, and have an interview, you and I, because you know a lot about the UFO abduction phenomenon.
I think I know a little.
Okay, good. Thanks again for joining us. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at WHFR.FM's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is UFOImplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. I want to thank you for joining us today, and please join us the first Tuesday of each month at 12 noon, when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Guys and dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G here in WHFR, and we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rear view mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.
Only you can make all this world seem right.